You're listening to Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas with an emphasis on homeopathy. Hi, and welcome. We are so excited to have our guest today, Dr. Nancy O'Hara. I'm just going to go ahead and dive right in and read her her bio, because we've got so many really great things that we want to talk to her about, something really, really specific that's pretty interesting. So let me just dive right in so we can get to the content. So Dr. Nancy O'Hara is a board certified pediatrician. Prior to her medical career, Dr. O'Hara taught children with autism. She graduated with highest honors from Bryn Mawr College as a member of the Alpha Omega Alpha Honor Society from the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. She earned a master's degree in public health from the University of Pittsburgh. After residency, chief residency, and general pediatric fellowship at the University of Pittsburgh, Dr. O'Hara entered general private practice in 1993, and in 1998 began her consultative integrative practice solely for children with special needs. Since 1999, she has dedicated her functional medicine practice to the integrative and holistic care of children with chronic illness and neurodevelopmental disorders such as ADHD, PANDAS and PANS, OCD, Lyme, and ASD. She is also a leader in the training of clinicians both in the United States and abroad. Dr. O'Hara has written a comprehensive guidebook, Demystifying PANS and PANDAS, a functional medicine desktop reference on basal ganglia encephalitis, which is available on Amazon. We'll put a link in the show notes if anybody wants to check it out, and an ebook or soft cover formats. And is this the one that you were telling us earlier that might have an audio book coming out around the time that this is launched? All right. So hopefully by the time that you're actually listening to this, there might be an audiobook as well. We're recording this a little bit early. For more information on her membership and mentoring program, you can visit her website at droHara.com. I will put a link in that as well. Additionally, Dr. O'Hara's research on folate receptor autoantibodies and PANS and PANDAS was recently published. And that is what we're going to talk to her about today, because this is such a topic that we can't go into all of the things. I've read your book. I've heard you lecture many times. We've connected multiple times at conferences and such. So there's so many things that we could talk to you about today. But this topic, I think there's just enough confusion that I'm really excited that we can talk about this specifically today. So welcome, Dr. O'Hara. We're so happy to have you here.
Thank you, Jennifer. And I'm so pleased to be here. And thank you for all the work that you do and all the help that you give to all of our kids in this realm.
Yeah. There's just so people have a context, we've got an awful lot of clients that we see that we call cross collaborate with, that we do different things to help these kiddos get to the point of recovery. And all of it is so important and matters so much. So let's first talk about you. Tell us a little bit about yourself beyond what you just shared in the bio, about how you got into medicine in general. Like, why did you make that leap from teaching? And then why did you make that leap from special needs to specifically PANS and PANDAS?
Yep. So yeah, that's the formal stuff and all that bio. But the real story is I started out teaching children with autism, and I was a really lousy teacher. And I say that with full modesty, but also truth. It was children with autism, and I had a psychiatrist I was working with, and he said, go to medical school. You can do that. And I went to be a psychiatrist, and then worked with Barry Brazelton, who at the time was the Dr. Spock, wrote a lot of children's books. And he said, oh, don't go into psychiatry. That's a waste of time. Do pediatrics. So I was taking the advice of certain mentors, went into pediatrics, was a partner in a general practice. And I was going through 5 years of infertility and nothing was working. And it was actually a patient of mine with autism that got better with diet. And that's another story. But she came back to me and she said, you got to look into this. And I thought it was hooey at the time. Mm-hmm. A diet change autism? Forget it. But I was going through infertility. So I went to Dr. Sidney Baker as a patient. And that changed my life. And he became my mentor. And I learned about functional medicine. And I started my functional medicine practice, as we said, in 1999, which was the same year my son was born. And fast forward 9 years, I have a neurotypical, wonderful son who within 1 week devolved into seizure-like tics after getting bit by a Lyme Borrelia-positive tick, getting a strep throat, and getting a live viral vaccine all in the same week, his first one. Anyway, because of what I knew in autism, because of who I knew, I threw the kitchen sink at him, and he was better within 3 months. But that started my journey on pans and pandas. Now, he is one of the topics in my book. He prefers not to be named. So it's a different name and a slightly different story. But I missed Bartonella in him. And I also miss cerebral folate deficiency. And those are things that over time, through other patients, through more research, through more learning, that I found out more about. And now my practice is almost solely focused on children with PANS and PANDAS, some of whom also have autism. But because I've had such a personal passion and root down it with everything he's gone through, Bartonella, mold, COVID, I learn something new every year. So.
Yeah, Nancy, I have to tell you that, so we were talking just before we started recording about how you and I apparently have an awful lot in common, that we're cut from the same cloth. I wasn't dealing with infertility yet, that came later, but it was my desire to have a child that led to me consulting with a homeopath and learning about homeopathy. And my own personal experience with being a kid who, you know, had I been born 20 years later, I would have gotten a PANS diagnosis, that led me to be sitting here talking to you and helping the community that I help in the way that I do. So, you know, I love that it's so personal to you, which really speaks to how you show up in places as well.
And I every day I thank God and Sid Baker for my infertility and for my wonderful son. If it wouldn't be for the infertility, I don't know that I would have ever really found functional medicine. I dabbled in it and pretended like I knew stuff, but that, together with working with several naturopaths, you know, I've learned so much more about how we really need to treat ourselves and be healthy human beings.
All right, well, let's go ahead and talk about the reason that we're here, which is the study that you recently published with several of our colleagues, and one of which we've actually interviewed previously for her book that she wrote. So Dr. Lindsay Wells, we can put a link to that. She wrote a fantastic book for siblings to help them understand this really challenging thing of being a sibling of a kid with PANS and PANDAS. So along with her and several others, you did a study with this was focusing on cerebral folate deficiency in pandas and PANS. So let's start, for people who are really, this is might be the first time they've ever heard of it. Can you define cerebral folate deficiency?
Sure. Cerebral, meaning brain. There's not enough folate getting into your brain. So folate is a very important and calming B vitamin that we should be getting in our food. But some kids, many of our children on the autism spectrum, including those with PANS and PANDAS, have difficulty doing that because they have an MTHFR defect, methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase, that's does not allow them to break down folate from food into what the brain needs, methyl tetrahydrofolate. However, with cerebral folate deficiency, there are also antibodies at the blood-brain barrier that block the entry of folate into the brain. And that's what really causes cerebral folate deficiency. The symptoms of that are brain fog, slow processing, anxiety, OCD, and tics. And we first noticed it, it was first defined for me in our children with autism. Because it was found that 71% of children with autism may well have cerebral folate deficiency. So we knew about it from our work in autism, but we also found it in our kids with PANS and PANDAS, and that's why we studied it and wrote this article.
Dr. O'Hare, how is cerebral folate deficiency diagnosed?
So traditionally, it's diagnosed by lumbar puncture, and that's why a lot of people don't get diagnosed appropriately. It was previously defined as 7% of the general population, but now, thanks to work by Dr. Quadros at SUNY Downstate, he found a test, folate receptor autoantibodies. The test is called FRAT, folate receptor antibody test, that together with improvement with bypassing the blocks with either leucovorin or methyl tetrahydrofolate, the test being positive, it's a blood test, and the addition of the treatment and the child gets better, that by definition gives you a diagnosis of cerebral folate deficiency. Previously, you could only diagnose it by lumbar puncture, but because of this blood test, it is easier to get the diagnosis.
Okay, interesting. I didn't know about that. I tried to get doctors to do the original or the first test on my daughter, and this is back, it's been years ago, and they kind of just laughed at me. So it's nice for me to hear that there's a new, like a new way to test for it. What about, can someone have antibodies and not have cerebral folate deficiency?
So yes. And the only way to know that is to do the treatment as if they have cerebral folate deficiency and they not get better. Okay. But there are a lot of cross reactivity. So especially thinking about kids with PANS and PANDAS, as we all know, it's not just the germ, it's the inflammatory response, the antibodies or proteins that attack the basal ganglia or the brain that cause the problem. So there can be cross reactivity with other antibodies that may show your folate receptor antibodies to be positive, but if you don't get improvement with treating it, then you don't have cerebral folate deficiency.
I really appreciate that we're talking about the fact that you can have antibodies to something and not have the condition. And there's plenty of people, because there's just like such a belief, especially in the PANS and PANDAS community, that if you have antibodies to something, then it's a problem. And it's not necessarily a problem. I'm certain that there's plenty of people who have the antibodies to these folate receptors who never get tested because they don't have symptoms too, right?
Exactly.
And so this is one of the things that I know you've got a lot of respect for homeopathy. It's not something that's your area of expertise. So that's one reason we've got a lot of patients and clients in common. But that's one reason that homeopathy can still be helpful in these sort of situations, because it is a dynamic condition, that this presence of this thing doesn't alone mean that it's going to lead to this disease or this particular outcome. And even if it is in the moment contributing to that outcome, it's something that can heal over time so that it's not continually and ongoing as a problem.
Yep. Absolutely. And I, as you said, I am a big believer in homeopathy. To help myself, I took a course for 2 years, but do not consider myself at all a homeopath, but more to just understand what other treatments my patients were getting that may be very helpful to them, as you know.
Yeah. What triggers folate receptor antibodies to form?
It's a great question, and we're still learning that. In children with autism, we thought it was genetic, that this was something that they were born with, like the ones that are born with primary mitochondrial dysfunction. But in fact, we feel that it may be a cross-reactivity with other antibodies, as I was saying, and that these antibodies develop because of the overall inflammatory condition and the lack of immune tolerance. And we do feel that that's part of it, because the kids with PANS and PANDAS, even those that do have cerebral folate deficiency and folate antibodies, can get better. And this is not a lifelong issue. So we're still trying to figure out all the triggers. One of them, though, is dairy. So if the child does have a positive frat, we do recommend removing dairy 100% for a period of time, usually at least 3 months, because the casein antibodies cross-react with the folate receptor antibodies and also block it. So it is important to remove that.
I remember learning about that specifically many years ago. And then waiting really intently to introduce dairy to my daughter, who at this time is 4 years old, until she was two. And so her immune system had an opportunity to mature a little bit, and that we could have a really clear understanding of like what happened when this was brought in. Like, did anything change for her because of just my own personal history and like that awareness, that specific thing. So, in your study, you discuss binding and blocking antibodies. Can you talk a little bit about these and whether there's any clinical difference between the two?
We're still learning that. The greatest percentage have binding antibodies, And then some children have both binding and blocking antibodies. Clinically, we have not yet seen any difference between the two types of antibodies. But I don't think our numbers are great enough yet in the blocking antibodies to have a real clear clinical picture. But if both of these antibodies are antibodies to the FOLR1, the folate receptor 1, and that individual has to get through the back door, a reduced folate carrier, which only lets leucovorin or folinic acid pass, which is interesting because it means that folinic acid should be much more likely to help, particularly with binding antibodies, and be much more direct than methylfolate. We're not necessarily seeing that clinically. So we're really looking to see more differences. But so far, neither Dr. Fry, Dr. Rossignol have done a lot of this research in children with autism, nor us in the PANS PIONEERS population have been able to see a clinical difference between these two.
So I'm actually curious, what made you want to explore this overlap between the, because it's most known in the autism community, as you've already shared. So what made you really want to explore it in the PANS PANDAS world?
Well, a lot of our kids with autism come in and say, I know my autism was PANS PANDAS. It's not autism. Can you give me the antibiotic to cure my kid?
Yeah.
And as we all know, antibiotics are not curative. It may be part of the answer, but it's certainly not the full answer. But I was exploring, a child with autism that was coming to me for PANS, and I was doing the cerebral folate and finding that those children all had it, as opposed to my children with autism without the PANS or PANDAS, where I was, so then I said, why don't we check this in the kids that were neurotypical before this abrupt change, this occurrence or dramatic change in OCD, tics, et cetera. So we started to do it in all comers. And the Relligen, who is the company that does the FRAT test, are very generous. If somebody is having trouble financially, they will give a discount if we're also giving them a discount. So they were a very easy company to work with. And it's not a terribly expensive test. So we just started doing it on everybody that came to the office because we were seeing it in more children that had autism as well as PANS PANDAS.
Yeah. So you said that it's most common in people who have both conditions. Is that correct? More common in the PANS kids than in the autism kids.
No, in the autism kids, it's 71%. In the PANS alone, in our study, which is the first one that's been done, it was 63.4%. So a little bit more in the kids with autism. But what I was saying is that the kids that had both, that were diagnosed with autism, but also have real PANS PANDAS, every single one of them was testing positive for in our practice. For cerebral folate deficiency. In the study, it's only including those who just have PANS or PANDAS and no features of autism.
Yeah. There's an interesting thing to learn right there for sure. Seeing that 100%.
Yeah.
What symptoms should a parent look for that would suggest cerebral folate deficiency could be a factor to consider?
The main symptoms that are discussed in the literature are slow processing, what I call brain fog, just not getting it, being more easily fatigued by learning. And then the other symptoms are all neuropsychiatric symptoms, as we see with PANS and PANDAS in general. It's OCD, anxiety, and tics. In fact, some of the medications for depression and anxiety, for example, are just methylfolate. Deplin is a medication that is prescribed by allopathic physicians for anxiety, and all it is methylfolate. So we know that those symptoms go along with cerebral folate deficiency. And I think more children in general with any type of neuropsychiatric symptoms, PANS, PANDAS, autism or not, should have this test done to see if it's a factor for them.
Okay. And then how is cerebral folate deficiency treated? And do you need to do anything other than supplement?
Right. Yes, you already mentioned all the medications and the supplements and such.
Right.
Anything else? Yeah.
So allopathic physicians and physicians who are looking at the genetics feel the direct route to treat it is leucovorin, which is a prescription form of folinic acid with a little bit of calcium. It's been used for decades for people undergoing chemotherapy, et cetera. Folinic acid in the supplement form is only available right now in low dose. And the biggest thing with cerebral folate deficiency, if you have to overwhelm the antibodies, overwhelm that block. And so a typical dose for MTHFR would be somewhere between 800 micrograms and no more than 5 milligrams. But for cerebral folate deficiency, that needs to be up to 30 milligrams, 50 milligrams. And Dr. Fry has used up to 150 milligrams, which is a little bit rich for my blood. But and that's of either methyl tetrahydrofolate or of folinic acid in whatever form. So working with two naturopaths in the state of Connecticut, where naturopaths are unfortunately not yet able to prescribe any medications, they are forced to use methylfolate. And although genetically methylfolate should not work as well, clinically we see methylfolate working as well as leucovorin for cerebral folate deficiency. And it is, at least in the children with PANS and PANDAS, definitely reversible when the rest of their inflammation, immune system dysregulation is improved.
So a lot of people don't necessarily know this about me because I'm known for, you know, homeopathy and I'm pretty good at that. I love genetics. I'm like kind of a genetics geek. And so I have dabbled in the past until I realized I'm a much better homeopath than I am like functional and like genomics person. I've dabbled in the past with using some of these different supplements to try and help manipulate biochemical pathways. And I got to tell you, it backfired for me so many times. And I see so many kids that in our practice, in our community, that we just, our Facebook community, that share that they don't realize why things are going so horribly wrong until they stop the methylated B vitamins. And then it's like, oh, there's that, that's what it goes, what happened. And, you know, me as an individual, I used to be able to take methylated Bs. Homeopathy helped to heal a lot of the things that were going on in my body. I can't handle methylated Bs anymore. They become a really big problem for me. I get like anxious and angry and I can't sleep. So I'm just curious if the presence of CFD makes it so that even if people have other like downstream variants with their genetics, like COMT or MAO variant, like those types of things that can be so prominent in our community, that can lead to methylated vitamins and folinic acid potentially even driving things that then their body can't clear, and then leading them to this like upregulated state. So I'm curious if you've seen any of that when you're using the really high doses, or if that's not really been so much of a problem because of the CFD.
So with anything we do, we start low and build up slowly.
Okay.
But if I start with methylfolate and a child has a bad reaction, an increase in anxiety, an increase in hyperactivity, et cetera, I will switch to folinic acid.
And that seems to take care of it.
That seems to take care of it. Absolutely.
Yeah, because it's more the methyl part that's the problem.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And they don't necessarily overcome that, especially, you know, for many different reasons, you know, mm-hmm. over methylators, but also if they have, you know, as you said, the COMT, but other, you know, MTHFD1, D1L, yep. other variants that make that problematic. So mm-hmm. I agree, you know, I'm doing some genomic testing, but for me, especially being trained by Sid, Dr. Baker, it's always about the N of one. It's about the child in front of me. And if they're not responding, then I'm going to switch them. And this doesn't bypass that if they have a problem with methylation.
And the truth is, if you've seen one kid with PANS, you've kind of seen one kid with PANS. Like, you know, yeah. the basics, but like they've all got their own unique things that are going on in their chemistry and their soup that they live in that changes how they
exactly.
respond.
Exactly.
So I'm curious if you have found that there are any risk factors for CFD.
You know, in my opinion, because the percentages in our practice are about 63%, PANS or PANDAS is a risk factor. And certainly we know from Fry and Rossignol's autism is. As of right now, we don't know of any other risk factors, but I do test it in other people that come in with other autoimmune disorders, and I have found it in a small percentage of those people. So again, with the symptoms, anxiety, OCD, tics, and brain fog, you know, at least two of those, I will test for it, and more is to be revealed.
You know, I'm curious if you have any thoughts about, because, you know, you said that autism or PANS would be a risk factor for CFD. Do you think it could be other way around too, that it's the cause? I'm sure that there's some parents who are wondering, is could CFD just be the cause of this? And or are there any other risk factors like a familial history of other autoimmune conditions, since there's so much, you know, every autoimmune condition is connected to other autoimmune conditions.
Exactly. This is going to be another autoimmune condition that we're just not used to testing for. Okay. And that's the way we should test for it. Could it have been present in the background and then they got a strep infection and that was the straw that broke the camel's back, but this was there in the background before? Absolutely. Okay. We just don't have that data yet. Nobody does.
Have you ever seen a kid with PANS? Because I've heard cases of kids with autism that they get folinic acid and their autism is gone, that it is just CFD. Have you ever seen a similar situation in PANS where it's...
I absolutely. And I presented this case at a think tank I recently went to. It was a mom who I thought had PANS, PANDAS, by history certainly did. And I recommended about five or six things to her to start taking. One of them was folinic acid. But the folinic acid I used was leucovorin as a prescription. And I find as an MD, sometimes the patients I get are looking for that quick fix. Mm-hmm. But just want to consider it a functional medicine quick fix. So this particular mom only did the leucovorin and her kid totally improved.
Yeah.
So in that N of one, yes, she may have had PANS or PANDAS, but all she did was leucovorin and the kid got better and we never needed to move on to anything else. So it is possible that this is either a big factor or, you know, really the main factor to try to get better.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to tell you, you are not alone. I think that everybody wants a quick fix, regardless. They want a quick fix, no matter what, whether it's homeopathy, whether it's functional medicine, whether it's, you know, conventional medicine. And you can't blame them, right? Because, you know, PANS and PANDAS is like so disruptive to your life. I'm just thinking as you're talking through this, that like, there's part of me that's like, you know, I love that I'm a homeopath, right? Because homeopathy can be the answer no matter what the cause is, right? So if it's PANS, PANDAS, homeopathy can help. If it's CFD, homeopathy can help because it addresses that underlying susceptibility to having this atypical immune response. And there are points where it's beneficial because with homeopathy, sometimes it's a slow process to heal. It's different for different people, how quickly they respond and how long it takes to respond. And being able to identify some of these different things. So like, is short-term use of anti-inflammatory is going to be more beneficial? Short-term use of antihistamines, short-term use of leucovorin or, you know, folinic acid supplement to help identify where you can put out fires while you're helping your body have a more typical immune response or non-response to the autoantibodies or even like reducing the production of the antibodies.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why I think it's so important. You know, it does take a village. It takes a village of us. It takes a village of interventions to see what sticks for an individual child. And as you said, you know, many of the things that we do are a marathon, including homeopathy in some kids. Yep. And if we need to treat the symptoms or treat something else that they may also be dealing with for a short period of time along the way, then we should do it. I think when we get stuck in one way of thinking, it doesn't help the child, let alone, you know, the family.
Right.
Is there anything that can be done to prevent cerebral folate deficiency?
You know, I don't think so. You know, there's nothing we can do to prevent PANS or PANDAS. I think we live in a very toxic world. There's a lot we can do in our diets that will be helpful, but actually preventing it, if a child has this autoantibody response, I'm not so sure. I mean, maybe if we all started homeopathy early in life, we would, but I don't know the answer to it, and it's a great one. And I decided to just answer that I don't know.
Well, the reality is that even if we all started homeopathy is not like an umbrella that just stops anything bad happening, right? So, you know, it can address the susceptibility, but you have to have the signs of what the susceptibility is first for homeopathy to address it. It could probably couldn't even prevent it.
Right.
If it's something that's part of your picture, it could probably reverse it pretty quickly if you address it early on. So if you're already working with a homeopath, you might be able to turn it around pretty quickly, but I don't think it would even stop. I don't think it would even prevent it, honestly.
Yeah. So that doesn't mean we shouldn't live as healthy a life as we can, but specifically for CFD, don't think so.
And like even avoiding dairy, which is, you know, a very strong correlation with the onset for CFD. That's not the only thing, right? I'm sure there's plenty of people who have been dairy free that still have CFD. So there's something else that's adding to it.
Right.
Yeah.
If one kid has antibodies, should the parents test siblings as well?
So one of the things, if you don't know me, you know, I'm not a big tester. I look at the N of one in front of me, the child in front of me, and most I do by history and physical exam. So if a sibling is also showing signs of any of those things we've talked about, brain fog, slow processing, OCD, anxiety, et cetera, then yes. But if not, then no. Now that's different than MTHFR, because as a genetic defect, if a child has a like, let's say, homozygous C677, you know, he got it from both parents. And so it's likely that other siblings would have that defect. And MTHFR is something I would test in other siblings, because you can do things preventatively to prevent issues like miscarriages, infertility, et cetera, that have been proven to be associated with MTHFR defects, but cerebral folate only if there's symptoms.
I just love that you don't test like every single person just for the sake of testing and doing a ton of tests, because it can get so overwhelming for PANS families. Yeah. And it's such a, since we know that it tends to run in families too, that if you've got a sibling who has autism or a sibling who has PANS, the other kid is more likely to end up having it. Parents are always looking for anything they can do to get early signs and avoid it. So I'm glad to hear that you really focus on just like the individual in front of you.
Yeah. And one of my questions is always, what am I going to do differently with this test? You know, the MTHFR is $50, or, you know, you can get it free from your conventional lab if your insurance covers it.
Yep.
Or you, if your one child responded well to folinic acid, it doesn't hurt any of the other kids to take a little folinic acid.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't say that as a doctor. I just said that.
None of this is medical advice. None of this.
Exactly. Exactly. The little misnomers at the bottom.
So you mentioned MTHFR a couple of times, and I'm sure that there are parents who are wondering if there is a connection between having the MTHFR variants and having cerebral folate deficiency, or if they're just completely unrelated other than that they both deal with folic acid and folate.
So far, we think they're unrelated, because we have children with just MTHFR and children with just CFD. But as the numbers grow, it is a, if I get a positive MTHFR, especially C677, and the child has that symptoms, I'm going to push that family a little bit more to get the FRAT test, because I'm seeing a little bit more of a correlation between MTHFR and CFD, but they are totally different. Mm-hmm. They get treated with low dose with MTHFR and very high dose with CFD. And the symptoms, you know, you don't have to have any of those other symptoms when you have MTHFR.
Right.
You have midline defects, you know, like tongue ties and sacral dimples and things like that. And as we now know, that infertility, miscarriages and pregnancy complications with MTHFR.
So one of the questions that we hear from our community a lot, you basically just answered, but I'm going to go ahead and summarize and you can just tell me if there's anything that's wrong. So people often want to know if they can just avoid synthetic folic acid, like can be done when you have MTHFR variants, that just avoiding synthetic folic acid and eating folate rich foods can, and for many people is enough, especially if they've been using homeopathy for a while, or if supplementation is necessary. And it sounds like in CFD, at least early on, especially if you're hopefully working with a homeopath too, that early on, it might be necessary. Later on, might be less necessary to supplement with folinic acid, and that you are seeing clinically, even though it doesn't really necessarily make sense from what is currently understood, that methylfolate alone, which is what is found in like leafy greens, that is having an impact on your kids that do have CFD.
Right. So I still recommend avoiding synthetic folate. No question. Yes. And I'll say also, it's different, a folate rich food naturally versus a folate enriched product. Mm-hmm. I do not recommend the folate enriched products right. for anybody, as I'm sure you don't either. But right. yes, with CFD, at least for a period of time, supplementation with folinic acid, or if you can't get the prescription folinic acid and your child can handle methylated B vitamins, methyl tetrahydrofolate can be helpful and necessary.
Yeah. So ultimately, for some reason, I feel like I need to say this just so we're really clear. Folic acid is not the same thing as folinic acid. Folic acid is the stuff that should be avoided for basically almost everybody. I don't know very many people who don't have an MTHFR variant. It cogs up, like gums up the works, and things just like really slow down and come to a screeching halt if you do it for too long, and or if your variants are enough. So folic acid is not the same as folinic acid. So if anybody's out there right now Googling and searching for something, make sure that you know that there's an extra IN, folinic acid, not folic acid. So at what point, Dr. O'Hara, what point should people really consult with somebody to get the testing versus just trying this out on their own?
So I feel very comfortable with a low dose without doing the testing. But if mm-hmm. you're going to markedly increase the dose, you definitely need to do it with a practitioner who can do this testing, or at least follow the symptoms along with you mm-hmm. So that they can help guide you. I don't recommend going to very high dose with either at least doing the testing or working with a practitioner that feels comfortable doing that without.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. All right. Well, we managed to actually get through this quicker than I thought we would, probably because it's just, I mean, it's relatively straightforward when we get down to it. So I can't thank you enough for coming to talk to us about this specific aspect of PanPanas. We'd be happy to have you back to talk about other areas. We can, just geek out on all the stuff for Pans Pandas. We'll make sure we put all of the information for how people can get in touch with you if they're wanting to learn more about you or your practice. And then we've got providers who listen as well. So we'll put a link to your book, which I've read and is fantastic. And we'll put a link to your book. And I know you have a mentoring program that we can share with people as well. Any other final thoughts or other ways that we should tell people how to get in touch with you?
Don't give up. You can get better. Your kids can get better. All of us that are here today are here to listen and to help. And that's what you need for your kid. In addition to what you mentioned, I do have a membership program, which is open to parents and practitioners, where I do monthly teachings as well as have huge resources and short videos, 2 to 5 minute videos on every different aspect of this disease that I hope are helpful, both about supplements, medications, herbals, nutraceuticals. I've done one on homeopathy with other people that are much more versed than I am, probably not as much as you are, Jennifer, but at least close. All of us are just trying to get the message out there that there is help and there is hope.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and we'll look forward to hopefully talking to you again in the future.
That Take sounds care, great. Everybody. Thank you.
Bye, guys.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We try to get a new episode out every week. You can make sure you don't miss any by following us on Spotify or subscribing to our channel on YouTube. If you want to connect with us more, join our Facebook group, Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas, where we have exclusive weekly videos and answer your questions about, you guessed it, homeopathy for pans and pandas throughout the week. If you are already a member, give us a shout out and let us know what you thought about this episode. If you aren't on Facebook and would like to reach us, you can email us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com. Until next time, take care and remember, this won't be forever.